Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
What are your plans for the rest of the year?
Eat bread and desserts and just get all fat and sassy.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's a beautiful network. It's Tuesday, December 7th. I'm J.E. Skeets. Alongside me, as always, that's Tass Mellis.
Hey, fellas.
What's up, Tassie? We've got our Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Hey, the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Certainly not least, making the magic happen, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Subscribe, like, comment, share. Quick heads up, later today, right here on this very feed, on this YouTube feed, we will have a new No Breaks, which is our F1 podcast with TK and Graydon Gordy. And that one goes live at 2 p.m. Eastern if you want to join the boys in the paddock. Otherwise, we'll flip that into a podcast as soon as humanly possible. 2 p.m. Eastern if you're an F1 fan, or if you're just sort of new to the sport, like I know a lot of us are with the Drive to Survive on Netflix. You guys do a great job. I got to say that. Especially like Graydon Gordy is so good. Like you got questions for him and he can like really tell you because he's been a longtime fan. Of like, what the hell's going on, right, TK?
Exactly right. We usually say this about Survivor. Now's a great time to get in for F1. We got only one race you got to care about. And like you're saying, Skeets, Graydon actually knows what he's talking about. So anytime I have a dumb question, when you were on, you were asking him dumb questions, he's got a smart answer for it. It's perfect.
He's really, really good at this stuff. All right. We got a fun podcast here today. We're talking more trades. Later on in the show, I'm going to hit you guys with some trades for the Blazers to make. Get your opinions on them. You know, moving everybody basically except Damian Lillard, if that's the first step that the Blazers ultimately try and decide to do. So I'll throw some at you guys, and you guys can, thumbs up or thumbs down them or tweak them a bit, whatever you want. But let's start with the games, because there was a lot of games on last night. We'll start with DeMar DeRozan having to enter COVID-19 health and safety protocols soon before the Bulls game, but that's okay. In the end, they go on to get the victory against the Nuggets, who are very shorthanded as well. Zach LaVine scored 32, TK, to get the Chicago win. But unfortunate news with DeRozan, of course, right on the heels of being named Eastern Conference Player of the Week.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been a blessed start for the Bulls, despite the fact they've had some injuries. They've had some COVID protocol concerns, like you're saying. But they're 17-8 right now, second in the East. Undefeated against the first place team. They had that great West Coast road trip where they swept both games in LA. Then they swept a couple more games in New York City as well. But I've actually found a couple of things really challenging with this team. Number one, I like to wear Bulls gear on the show the day after a big win, and it's getting hard to keep up with this laundry as the Bulls stack win after win after win after win. And number two, it can be hard to find the words to express just how back the Chicago Bulls are because, like you're saying, Skeets, DeRozan was a scratch about 2 hours before tip-off, right after he won Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Some of y'all might have started thinking, I don't know, the Bulls might not be back. As it turns out, even more back than you could imagine. No DeRozan, no Kobe White, no Javonte Green. They're all in COVID protocols right now. Even Stacey King missed the game last night. We had silly Billy Wennington on the call. Alex Caruso, a late scratch as well with a hamstring injury. Patrick Williams, he's out right now, likely for the season due to wrist surgery. So five of the Bulls' top 10 guys are out, and it did not matter because the Nuggets are equally shorthanded and the Bulls have not one, but two all-NBA MVP candidates. Last night it was Zach LaVine, 32 points, a season-high 8 assists, and honestly dominated in the third quarter. Had 12 points, had 3 assists, the step backs were looking nice, the twisty layups were looking Jordan-esque. He played the entire quarter and keyed every single Bulls run. They had a 7-0 run, they had an 8-1 run, they had a 7-0 run. He went into takeover mode on a night when the Bulls really, really needed it. LaVine was the star last night, but this was a team win. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 4 threes, and 4 blocks for Lonzo Ball last night. He put an exclamation point on the W, catching a huge oop midway through the fourth quarter in this one. Sweet Vucci, baby. He couldn't shoot. 8 for 24, still put up 20 and 10. Hit a big three in the fourth quarter because that's what he does. Most importantly, helped hold Nikola Jokic to a quiet triple-double, 17 points on 17 shots. And honestly, the Bulls looked better defensively when it was just Vucevic straight up against Jokic. Anytime the Bulls were doubling, it was an easy three-pointer for the Nuggets. So in the second half, Vuce was just competing defensively, made it tough on Jokic. And I got to give a huge shout-out to Ayo Dosunmu. His first career start, got introduced as from Chicago, played a career-high 41 minutes and 50-something seconds, finished with 11 points. 6 boards, 8 assists. Derrick Jones Jr. was good. Troy Brown Jr. was good. Tony Bradley, he was back in the rotation. He was good. Even Matt Thomas hit a 3 last night. The Bulls could have turtled this one away. Instead, one of the best wins of the season. Incredible stuff. I saw people saying they were the best team in the Eastern Conference last night. Kind of tough to say considering we're going to be talking about the Bucks next. Nonetheless, awesome win for the Bulls last night.
Yeah. Tass, we didn't have you on yesterday's show, and one of the questions we were asking was, are the Bulls like squarely in the upper echelon, that upper tier of Eastern Conference teams? Like, do you include the Chicago Bulls at this point of the season here, especially with these victories, missing guys like Trey took us through with DeRozan there, the star player probably from this season? Are they right there at the Bucks and Nets? Are they still a tier below them in your mind? Or is there anybody else in that mix? What do you think, Tess?
Yeah, they're definitely part of that tier. If they've got Trey Kirby wearing undershirts just to preserve his dirtbag move, he's got an undershirt on.
God.
The self-proclaimed dirtbag move with the sweater on top. You've got to wear undershirts now. That's a double Bulls. You got a Bulls on top and a Bulls
double
underneath.
Double Bulls! What does it mean?
I like that you're calling it a dirtbag move. I thought it was a scumbag Steve move. Yeah, but I love it.
Same deal. Chuck Swirsky, they're dancing here on YouTube if you missed it. It was cool to see Chuck Swirsky and Bill Wennington on front row there. I was watching the in-game arena stuff going on. It was good to see a Billy chomping on some gum there courtside and Chucky Swirsky there, our good old friend from Toronto. Yeah, I think they definitely belong there. It stinks for DeMar DeRozan having to go into health and safety protocols. As Billy Donovan said, that he's been extremely careful, and I'm not sure how Billy Donovan knows that. Are they hanging out all the time? But I guess he knows that he's been extremely careful and he's had to enter health and safety protocols. It stinks because DeMar's had such a great start to the season, but it's cool to see last year Zach LaVine again, just having to do everything, because it's cool to see how he's evolved. And I like to focus on Zach LaVine sometimes. I can only focus on one player at a time. It's hard for me to focus on multiple players, but it's cool to see Zach LaVine and what he's turned into over the last several years, because it was a crazy athletic guy, you know, for the first few years, and he's just so fun to watch because he's so unique athletically. And I think myself, others included, wondered, is he just going to be a crazy athlete and not really turn into a basketball player? But now he's got every move in the bag. There was the move he went right at Nikola Jokic. He had a little sort of a push dribble, pushed it ahead towards the baseline, and then just rose up and hit over him. At any point, you can think, oh, maybe Zach LaVine's kind of lost in his move, and then he'll just rise up because he can jump over anybody. So it's kind of cool to see last year Zach LaVine, that, like Trey described there, where he had to kind of do everything. But Trey also described going through the roster. Io from Chicago and Matt Thomas, the day he had his little avatar on basketballreference.com. Was that a coincidence that he came out and played yesterday? I almost didn't recognize him on Basketball Reference, but he came out and played yesterday. Everybody on that roster, Troy Brown, all the way down. It's a deep team, and as Zach LaVine said after the game, it's worn on him that they've been losing year after year after year, but a different mindset in Chicago. And, yeah, they've got to be part of the top tier. I don't see how you don't include them.
Back to Trey wearing a Bulls t-shirt under his Bulls sweatshirt while he wears a Bulls hat. Ofek here in the stream team says, it's like when you cut open a bell pepper and there's a little pepper inside of it. That's like TK with his Bulls merch. I always do love when you find a secret pepper inside a pepper, and that's Trey right now. Ali, do you have anything to add about the Bulls are back and all that stuff? And why don't you ever say Homer on TK when he's talking about his Bulls? You would never fucking stop when I was talking about the Raptors.
I don't want to sully the mood. Trey's so happy right now. It has been a while since the Bulls have been back, and it's fun to see. It's like also one of those Russian dolls, you know, where you take it off and there's just another one, a Miskina, I think it's called, something like that. Anyway, I really just want to focus on two players. Ayo Dosunmu, I thought, was just incredible. Trey obviously touched on him there. He got the start, and it really says a lot about a rookie who can come into the starting lineup and play the way that he did, because this guy, I believe, earned his spot there primarily because he's worked hard on the defensive end all season long. He's always hustling. He's always trying to get in the way and affect the game on that end, because he knows, especially not only just as a rookie, but on a team with so many other guys who can score and shoot and have plays run for them, he's not going to get plays run for him offensively. He has to find ways to be effective, whether that's, you know, getting little tip-ins or putbacks or you know, broken plays that come his way. Mm-hmm. But also, as well, last night you saw just past the guys who are the scorers and the shooters on your team, because that's a way to get the respect from the veterans and the coach, to be like, you know, don't go out there and try to replace DeMar DeRozan's shots and minutes, because that's not what he's being asked to do. But instead, go out there and do what you've done by being effective defensively, starting that break in transition, and then just pass the ball to those other guys, because that's what you're supposed to do. He'll return to the bench, obviously, when DeRozan comes back. But he really has shown that he's a mature rookie, and he's talked a good game about saying, you know, I've got to be ready, wait for my opportunity and do the right thing. But then he actually went out and proved it. So I think that's a really, really good sign for a young guy, second round pick. You know, a lot of rookies, you know, they're impatient, they're not quite ready for the NBA, and they're not quite ready for that moment. He proved he was last night. And then the other point is Lonzo Ball. I'm going to play psychologist here, which is always fun. I'm going back to that Nets game where DeRozan found him for that three-pointer, because he hadn't been shooting the ball all that well. And I do believe those things can have a knock-on effect in the next game. I thought Lonzo Ball was really confident last night shooting the ball. And I think that that comes from the fact that his teammates, you know, trusted him, even though he was having a bit of an off couple of games there. When he needed to step up again, there's more shots there last night without DeRozan, he stepped up and he made them. And he also made the defensive plays, and he was rebounding the ball. So all those things, to me, really tell you that the Chicago Bulls team is on the same page right now. DeRozan goes out, and it's not like, well, what are we going to do here? Everyone else just sort of lifts, does a little bit more, chips in here and there. And they also understand just what is expected of them. There's no excuses. It's not like, well, DeRozan's not there, we can afford to lose this game. They go out there and play just the same way. So really, really good signs to me that this locker room is on the same page and really in sync with each other.
There's been so much talk, too, about, like, Caruso, defensive player of the year. He's got to be in the mix, or at least on an all-defensive team, or, you know, which I think he will be maybe in the end. But I think the same should be said about Lonzo Ball. This guy is unbelievable. He is elite on that end. I think he's flirting with, like, he's getting close to, like, two steals per game, and he chips in a block a game at his position, which is sort of rare. So, you know, I'd like to see his name sort of be included there, at least in talks about, oh, being one of the, and I know he has been before, but it's just been all Caruso. He's just as good, right, Trey? Like, what he can do on the defensive end especially.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of funny to see last night, because Lonzo had a couple of blocks, like, in the first couple of minutes of this game, and the way he plays, generally, he's, like, running around like crazy, gambling for steals, gambling for help, trying to get deflections. And usually that's at its best when Caruso is also on the floor, because Caruso can really make up for a lot of Lonzo's gambles, like cover for his spot where he's left it behind. That was not happening with the Bulls in the first half. Lonzo was running around a little bit too crazy. It led to a lot of open threes for the Nuggets, so the Bulls decided to play it a little bit more straight in the second half, and Lonzo's just, He's just wreaks havoc, and then he's such he's so good at then turning defense to offense that it rubs off on the other Bulls as well. So they're not always a great half-court team, but they're a great full-court team, and a lot of that is Lonzo doing defense to offense. Another cool thing last night, the Bulls had a six-point possession. They hit a three and got called for a flagrant foul on the old Zaza Pachulia land under, so went to the free throw line. Lonzo had two free throws to make one. Very weird.
Yeah.
Hit it. But the Bulls then get the ball back and they got a dunk. I think it was a Derrick Jones Jr. dunk. So they got a 4-point play, then the dunk. 6 points on one possession, plus the two to make one. That doesn't happen very often.
Oh, that's like John Schumann's wet dream. That type of stuff. 6 points on one possession. Oh my God. Get some crazy hard. Sorry to put that visual in your head. John Schumann hard. Look at that one. You'll never be able to shake that one all day, will you, Lee? All right, our next game here, Joel Embiid, a monster. This one got me hard. 43 points. 76ers held off the pesky Hornets, who are very short-manned right now. A lot of guys in health and safety protocols as well. Sixers 127-124 over Charlotte in overtime. I was locked in on this one. Task was one of the earlier games, obviously very entertaining. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, it came down to the wire, and the Hornets broadcasters thought they were going to pull it out with a very shorthanded team. The stars in the health and safety protocol, no LaMelo Ball right now, but it was coming down to the wire. And it's a true small market team with the broadcasters that are true homers. When they're on the broadcast, they're just pulling for the home team. They're just yearning for the home team. And they were just saying, basically, with 4 minutes left, they had the lead. It looked like, you know, it looked like they could pull it out. And they're just saying, we just need a couple stops. We just need a couple stops, and this will be a signature win, a huge win. This could turn our season around. And that made it fun, because then Joel Embiid ripped their heart out, because it was pretty fun to see the Joel Embiid of last year. Just talked about Zach LaVine of last year. Mm-hmm. Embiid has been, you know, not quite himself, not quite the runner-up in the MVP voting. And I thought he had his best game in this one. Everything going through him. Charlotte had no answer for him. He had a 42-point night a couple weeks ago. He's playing Karl-Anthony Towns. But this one was 43 against the Hornets team. Again, that's too small. So they're doubling him. And he only took two threes in this one. So it was pretty cool. And that jump shot with 30 seconds left, it looks like a bad shot for a lot of big men. But he was able to tie the game from the mid-range, where is where he killed everyone last year. That is where Joel Embiid made his money last year. They just were able to find him with, you know, those entry passes in the mid post, because the Sixers do and did in this game struggle to get him the ball in the post. Bad passes, bad angles, just struggling to find it there. But if Joel Embiid, like with 30 seconds left, can take the ball up top and just drag his defender into the mid-range and hit shots like he did last year at an incredible rate, that's why he was so good. They're unstoppable, and that's how the Sixers pulled this one off. And Kelly Oubre helped out by taking a bad shot there, although he had a big three, and then he took a bad shot, because that's the Kelly Oubre experience. But, the Hornets almost pulled it out. But, without LaMelo Ball really running the show, I thought that kind of hurt at the end with that Oubre shot. But, yeah, great, great effort at home. In the gradient jerseys, the Kelly Oubre jerseys, and they almost, almost pulled. That would have been, as much as Dell and Eric Collins wanted it, the broadcasters there, that would have been a really big win. But yeah, that was a dagger there by Joel Embiid to pull it into overtime, and then they pulled it off.
Yeah, what a monster line. The 43 points, 15 boards, 7 assists on 15 of 20 shooting for Embiid, 12 of 14 at the line there as well, Lili. And I think Tass is right. That's what I thought watching this game. I was like, oh yeah, Joel Embiid last year was a legit MVP guy. And, you know, hasn't really been the case for a whole chunk of this season, because he missed a big chunk of it too with his own worries there with COVID, and he's talked about that. So it was cool to be reminded of, like, oh yeah, this guy can sort of tilt to playoff series, or, you know, obviously like a favorite even in an Eastern Conference when he plays like that. Because when the mid-range is going, I don't really know how you stop him.
No, and it certainly helps when they don't really have a big, tall guy who can get up there to stop
PJ Washington trying to
guard him. That's a problem that the Hornets have faced a lot this season. Plumlee's out right now anyway. So and Plumlee's not a great defender, but he's at least taller, can maybe get his hand up a little bit higher than Washington. But all things considered, the Hornets had a chance to win this game. They still nearly could pull it off. Kelly Oubre, I mean, what a fantastic overall game he had, but he did have that missed layup at the start of overtime as well. So he had a couple of those plays that just kind of take a little off the table despite the six threes that he had going into the starting lineup. But Eric Collins, a couple of times, I mean, openly just like saying, oh, Embiid's settling. Bang, knocked it in. Embiid settling, bang. Even Dell pulled him into line and said, you can't say that's settling because that's his shot.
Because he can't miss.
Exactly. Yeah. He's knocking those in. So it was great. But Embiid also talked about, I think, he's had that coronavirus, so he was out for a while, and that probably affected his conditioning. And he sort of said he was looking back at tape, and he's got to establish a bit more of that position down low because that's where he really is unstoppable, again, especially against smaller guys. Now, they're tougher guys, but Embiid is just a better player. So it was good to see him really put his dominance on this game last night. He only had 7 points in the fourth quarter and 6 in the overtime. Now, I say only because it felt like he had way more than that. It felt like it was one of those games where you look at the box score and he said, well, he must have had, 18 points in the fourth quarter. He didn't quite dominate in that aspect, but his presence was clearly the difference here between these two teams. But the crowd last night seemed really into it as well. Charlotte's not one of those arenas that you looked at where the crowd's going crazy, but they were last night because it was such an entertaining game. So really good win for the Sixers to pull that out. Good performance by the Hornets, all things considered. But Eric Collins and Del Curry, must listen to those guys. They're always so entertaining.
Oh, man. Collins was going nuts on a couple Hornets dunks last night,
JT
too.
JT Thor in the hammer.
And then Book Knight had huge putback dunk in the fourth quarter where Collins was losing his mind. Yeah, I mean, if the Hornets are playing, I'm always listening to the Hornets broadcast. It's just too much fun. It makes the game so much more enjoyable. And the Hornets play a bunch of these insane games too.
No one plays defense.
They don't play defense. Yeah,
that's awesome. I think they've given up like 130 points or thereabouts to almost every opponent this year. The JT Thor dunk was hilarious. Of course, Eric Collins hits us with, he threw a lightning bolt. That's expected, right? The guy's last name is Thor. My favorite line he had on it, though, was, I think he just cleared his sinuses, too. What? Literally, what does that mean? The only the only bigger question I had was afterwards, according to the AP, Doc Rivers called this game for Joel Embiid a feed the pig game. Don't like that at all. Very much like boar on the floor. Very disgusting, but I like to see the deeper post-ups from Embiid. Like, he does have a nice mid-range jumper. I feel like he can get a little bit too Patrick Ewing at times where he would rather shoot the mid-ranger than get that boost inside, but only 5 misses on the night. He got started inside and then worked his way out to the mid-range game. He's taken double-digit free throw attempts in 4 of 5 games since coming back from COVID. So you can tell he's rounding into shape and really mashing guys down low.
Yeah, Tobias Harris was also good, I think, for the Sixers last night. I think a 20-10 game, 21-11, something like that, contributing there. He had been in and out of this lineup too. So Sixers, I think I heard, maybe they're on the Daily Ding this morning. First time the Sixers have won back-to-back games in like a month. Obviously they want to start rising back up the Eastern Conference standings as they get these players back, and we wait and see whether or not they of course make a move. All right, let's keep it going here. The Hawks hit 25 three-pointers, 25, to beat the Timberwolves 121-110. Get it started, Lee.
Well, the Hawks needed a convincing victory because they lost the night before at home to the Hornets and then on Friday night at home to the Sixers. Now, okay, that's fine. The Sixers are a team that they can afford a loss to. And then they came out last night and just pounded Minnesota from deep. 25 threes, as you mentioned, only 49 attempts. And every single player except for Clint Capella hit a three for the Hawks last night. Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot went 7 for 14.
Was
in
that
the start.
Your wine order?
Yeah. John Collins.
No, only
three.
Italian ones.
Yeah,
no Frenchies. Trey hit 4. Danilo Gallinari off the bench had 4. Kevin Huerta had 2. Gorgui Dieng even hit 3 last night. So honestly, the Timberwolves didn't play terrible. They didn't defend the three-point line well, but they were just chasing the Hawks all night. And the Hawks just didn't cool off. And so, you know, this is a real modern day game, the way it's played, where you just came down and was like, everyone spreads the floor out. And if everyone gets hot, becomes contagious. We know that sometimes teams can go just as cold from outside as the Hawks got hot last night. And the Timberwolves just didn't really have an answer. They didn't have D'Angelo Russell last night. Now, I'm not sure that helps them defensively, but offensively, they could have used him out there to at least try to keep up with the Hawks, but they just weren't able to. Timberwolves, another one of those little runs they go on where it's like, are they okay or are they not very good? Last night was more in the column of like, they just can't seem to ever solidify a position where you think, okay, maybe this team is good. Edwards and Kat, sure, fine, but they were just down last night and just never really got into the game because they couldn't stop the Hawks hitting threes. I mean, like I say, when everyone off the bench is just coming out there firing away like that, it's pretty hard to stop. And Chris Finchie, he talked about their defensive effort, and it's like, yep, you can talk about it all you want, but if a team's lining you up for four straight quarters, then it's really on the players, I think.
Tass, I know you were locked in a little bit on this Hawks-Wolves game. I saw you tweeting about it last night. Anything to add to Lili's breakdown there from a very solid Hawks win there on a back-to-back situation?
Yeah, franchise record 25 threes because Timothy Luau-Cabarrot was not part of the game plan for the Minnesota Timberwolves. They just left him open. Understandable. He went 7 of 14 from three. Bang, 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 bang. That was huge. And Danilo Gallinari looked like it was 10 years ago. He looked spry off the bench. He looked like a totally different guy. He looked like he was having some Italian wine. Now, Lee, are you saying there was only Italian wines on the wine list? Because you missed a section.
I told him, Tass, on yesterday's show.
I told you, too.
That
I told
said,
you right
yeah.
then. But yeah. Anyways, it doesn't matter. The wine was fine, no matter what JD says. It was fine.
I didn't say it was bad. What are you talking about?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said it was pissy.
I thought
you used the word
that.
Pissy.
No, he definitely didn't say that.
Oh. What was the word you used?
Delicious? I don't know. I don't remember saying anything bad about the wine he ordered.
Everybody relax. JD, he didn't mind the wine that Lee picked at our Christmas dinner on Friday night.
People were upset me because I said Shiraz sucks. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, people were upset.
Which it does. I stand by that. It's horrible. But, you know, it's a grape. Don't come at me because of a single grape. There's a whole litany of delicious wines out there. I just don't like Shiraz. Anyways, carry on.
There are a lot of grapes. There are a lot of grapes out there when you think about it. There's hundreds, millions of grapes. You just don't think of that. There's a lot of grapes out there. Danilo Gallinari was squishing some grapes between his feet. He looked great out there. 25 threes. Yeah, they were just moving the ball so nicely. The Hawks, I think, were a little pissed off after their last loss on the weekend. And, they looked like they turned it around. Now, the Wolves didn't have D'Angelo Russell, and I think that was a big part of why they looked the way they looked. And Karl Anthony Towns coming back from that injury in his first game. But, the Hawks weren't going to lose this game the way they were moving it around. 25 doesn't seem like it should be a franchise high for that team the way they let it fly. But, it is a lot of threes, even in today's game.
All right, our next game, just really quickly here, Giannis scored 27 points on his 27th birthday as the Bucks beat the Cavs 112-104. It gets even better than that because Bleacher Report pointing out that he also played in 27 minutes. Lately, you like the numbers? Are you a numerologist? What does it mean? What does it mean? I really just wanted to ask you, Lee, what you did on your 27th birthday. And if you have a photo you could show us.
Yes. You give me a minute and I'll get one because it was the...
Just tell me about it, okay.
It was the Champions League final in 2003 at Old Trafford in Manchester. It was AC Milan versus Juventus. I was there for that game. It was on my birthday. So
your 27th birthday?
Yes, May 28, 2003.
You honestly amaze me. I was getting ready for the show this morning, showering, thinking, I'll ask Lee what he did on his 27th birthday. I doubt he'll even know because I was like, I don't know what I did on my 27th birthday. No clue, but of course you know. You know exactly where you were, and you have a photo that you're searching for right now.
Yes, I am.
Anyway, from this game, another feisty performance from the Cavs, Tass. Like, they're in a lot of these games. They had a chance to take the lead in the fourth quarter. Obviously come up short, but that's okay. The fight is there. But the Bucks are just too good when their three guys are playing. They're still undefeated, if anybody's keeping track, when Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday are in the lineup. So that's good. Giannis hit all three of his threes last night. Also nice, 12 boards. You know, he was returning from the sore right calf. The Bucks had split those two games that he missed, so they're not too upset with that. But also an insane stat in the AP report. The Bucks are 43-4. 43-4 against the Central Division since Budenholzer took over as coach in 2018. Holy crap. That is... I know the Bulls have had some rough years, right? Right, TK?
And yeah, there's a lot of Pistons teams in the Central Division.
Pistons. And who's the final one? I'm forgetting.
Cavs, Bulls, Pistons, Boo. Pacers. And then the Pacers have been the best of the
Pacers.
Four.
That's wild, though. Only four losses? I mean, some of those teams are bad. You guys are right. But yeah. This is the NBA. That's a crazy stat. So they have taken care of business against the Central Division.
I'm sure what's that that site that you referenced there with the trade the other day, the NAN?
NBA Analysis Network, I think it was.
NBA Analysis Network, that's the one. I'm sure they've got a report on it. They love doing division reports.
yes, that's right.
They go division by division, hard on the divisions. Giannis pulled it out the end. I think it is easy to forget, as he said, that they haven't been healthy. I know we talk about Brook Lopez a lot, but everybody has been in and out of the lineup. So unbeaten with their big three and feeling good about themselves as they're, you know, part of the Nets, Bulls, little triumvirate at the top there.
Yeah.
They feel great. And Giannis, it was in the fourth quarter where he just kind of like finished the game. And I had picked the Cavs to cover that 6.5-point spread. And then Giannis just splashed a three in the last minute just to ice it. But the Cavs are always going to be there for sure. They're always going to fight. And, they're not going to cover if Giannis Antetokounmpo is hitting three-pointers. Yeah, he looks great. A couple games off, feeling good on his 27th birthday.
Looking
Happy
fresh.
Birthday, Yanni.
Did you find it, Lee? I mean,
what's taking
so long? Come on, I just want to see this photo now. That's definitely going to be underwhelming. it's going to be you standing outside a building. Let's see it. Here we go. Happy 27th birthday. Oh, it's standing inside a building.
Hey. Hey.
Okay, this is actually pretty good.
A Labatt
good.
Blue shirt.
Oh, my God. Head, why are you wearing a Labatt Blue t-shirt?
Well, that
the
was...
The world is in that bag. What you got in that bag?
Yeah, you know, I lived in Canada for a year before that, so I was still in my Canadian, you know, sort of phase there. But
you got that shirt free in a case of beer. That's... You didn't buy it.
Probably. Probably. Most likely, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Hey, happy belated birthday to you.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate it.
For your 27th birthday.
27th. All right. Great one.
The other games from last night, I'll just throw them all at you. Task, go wherever you want. Grizzlies won their fifth straight, led by Desmond Bain and his big arms, and then Dylan Brooks and his crazy face. The Thunder rallied to beat the Pistons. They ended their 8-game skid. Yeah, OKC, Detroit. We'll actually touch on that later, of course, with the pick'em. Pacers pulled away early. They held off the Wizards for the 116-110 win. Chris Paul did his thing, 21-10. Suns beat the Spurs, 108-104. Curry and Wiggins led the Warriors to a blowout victory over the Magic. And Paul George scored 21 as the Clippers took care of the shorthanded Blazers, 102-90. Any of those games you wanted to touch on?
Well, the Thunder... jumping back from a 73-point loss. That's pretty good. They tweeted after their 73-point loss a photo of a couple of their guys with the caption, regroup and back at it Monday. Everybody laughed at them. Regroup and back at it Monday. Ha ha. And they came back and won on Monday. They followed through on the twit. Good for them.
And they were down in this
game. They were
game.
Down 18 points in this game as well. So what does that say about the Pistons? I mean...
Well, according to you, they should be investigated for tanking and Silver should step in and strip everyone in the front office of their role. Come on.
That was a very impressive bounce back there from the Thunder. Now, they obviously had Giddy and Gilgeous Alexander back as well, which helped. But the Pistons, I mean, come on, having an 18-point game and then a lead and then losing by... Did they lose by double digits, was it, in the end? I know it was out there to double digits. I'm not sure what the final was. But what about the Memphis Grizzlies also? Let's give them some love. 5 consecutive games now where they have not trailed at all. That is unbelievable. So now the Heat, obviously, they're down a few players. Jimmy Butler was back there last night.
He played and left, I think.
Yeah, he picked up another injury. But even still, for the Grizzlies to be doing all this still without Ja Morant is quite an incredible achievement by them. So their defense is unbelievable right now. Over those last five games, their defensive rating is 90. Unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable.
So, some people are saying they should trade Ja Morant. Are you one of them, please?
Yeah, trade him to the Pistons, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
TK, any of those games that I threw out at the end that you wanted to touch on quickly?
Steph Curry made 7 threes, so now he is 15 threes away from passing Ray Allen, or for tying Ray Allen for most all-time, 16 away from passing him for most in the regular season. He's not ruling it out for the next game. They play against the Blazers, which is a perfect perfect opponent to try and go for a 16-3 game. As he mentioned, he knows that what that would do for Klay Thompson's current record for most threes in a game. So, yeah, 7 threes last night, but it's really just more exciting to see what Steph Curry does in his next game because it kind of feels like he's going to at least try to go for the all-time three-point record. Sign me up. I'll watch.
Is it in Portland or Oakland?
It's in Golden State.
In Golden State. Okay.
So it's at home. Yeah. Like Trey said, he needs 16 to surpass Ray Allen for regular season three-pointers made. If it doesn't happen then, which, I mean, that would be a record, 16 threes, then they're on a five-game road trip. So it would be happening probably on the road lately. Philadelphia, Indiana, New York, Madison Square Garden there, Boston and Toronto.
Yeah. He's got to, if he doesn't do it against the Blazers, he's got to do it in the Garden, doesn't he, really? I mean, that's the next biggest
spot. But he'd have to miss a lot of threes on purpose to get to like game four.
So it's got to be the Blazers. I would also accept against the Philadelphia 76ers with his brother there in attendance Maybe you can rest against the Pacers on that Monday if you're not there. Do it in the Garden. You're right. Yeah. Just basically anything except for the Pacers.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll legit give it a go on Wednesday night at home?
I think so. Why not? Wow. That'd be a great way to do it.
He's saying, he said after the game, I know exactly where I'm at. He's definitely aware of what the hell's happening. This is one that he knows. Yeah, the best shooter in the world, he's going for it, man. That play at the end of the first quarter was so amazing, where he's in his backcourt and Gary Harris poked it from him and scored 7 seconds left in the quarter, and then he just goes up, shoots a half-court shot and buries it in Gary Harris's eye. That was amazing.
I swear to God, he's done this like, it feels like three straight games where he's hit like a half-court shot to end a quarter or end a half. I mean, at least it's two. Maybe I'm stretching it to three, but it feels like every game, right, Lee? There's a Steph Curry highlight where he hits something at the end of a quarter or a half from 40 feet.
Yep. And that's why guys should try to do it rather than save their field goal percentage, because it's way better when guys knock them in, you know? But everyone just releases it just after the buzzer. I think Worldwide calls it the field goal percentage savings club. Go for
it. His first name. I know. His name isn't World or Worldwide.
You know who I'm talking about. He changes his name after someone has a big night. I'm not sure if he's changed it from anyone from last night, like to Wombeed or someone, you know, but that's why you just got to go with Worldwide.
Okay.
He had a funny video up the other day after the Knicks lost to the Nuggets. I don't know if you guys saw it, but one of those ones, a minute long, and you're watching it, and he doesn't say anything. He barely moves.
Oh, I watched that.
Keep waiting. It's a great video because you're like, you're waiting. Is it? And then you're like, have I done something wrong? Is it frozen or whatever? And then you just realize that says so much without saying anything.
First name World, last name Wob. Middle name Wide.
last note about a guy who's I'm not sure whose name, if his first name is George or Paul. Anyway, 50% in October from the floor, 41% in November, now down to 29% in December from an MVP candidate. Does it every year? That's shocking.
Every year,
shocking that it happened. Again, because he was an MVP candidate to start, and now he's fallen off. Although, they squeaked one out there. Against the Blazers, because they always squeak one out. But the Blazers falling off. We'll get to them, won't we? Hold on. The Thunder. I know we laugh about the Thunder. And ha, ha, ha. Yeah, they've got more wins than the Pistons. But the guy who turned around that game was Kenrich Williams. I thought he was just like the scrappy guy off the bench. Now, if they trade him, that's a reason to shut that team down. Shut it down. Because he is a guy who's a winner. He comes in and just turns the game around. And to me, Shea was back. Obviously Giddy was back. They look good. And how can they be shut down if they have more wins than the Detroit Pistons? It's because of how they handle their players. Mm-hmm. And to me, last year, they weren't reprimanded for the Horford and the Shea sitting down. I'm looking forward to January and February if they trade Kenrich Williams to a team that needs a guy that, you know, has a little spark plug. And they're just, what are they doing? It's going to happen. Anyways, it's going to happen. It'll happen.
Between the 6-point possession and all this Kenrich Williams talk, this might be John Schumann's favorite episode of the season.
Oh, it is. He loves Kenrich Williams.
Oh, yeah.
His crazy haircut. All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, we will talk some non-Damian Lillard trades for the Blazers. Lee, what do you got?
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I'm almost afraid to ask, JD, but how is the Classic Factory coming along?
It's coming along. We're making progress.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say that everything doesn't work when I first plug it in.
It's actually really shocking to me. You think this stuff at this point, 2021, you know, you plug in this stuff and it just goes. Yeah.
Now, when you reach sort of like we're leveling up, so we're in sort of the pro land, the prosumer land, right? So it's like there's very little instructions that come with this stuff, and then you got to call and you get attitude, man. Like, oh god, these gearheads, man. They're like, well, of course it doesn't. That's a 56K light. Of course it doesn't. You can't warm that up. You need a gel, man. Like, I don't know, man. I just want to make a podcast, bro.
All right, progress though.
We're getting there. Short answer is we're getting there.
All right, baby steps, guys, to the Classic Factory coming together. Okay, so let's get into some Blazers trade talk. I can't tell if people like this stuff or hate it, but who cares? We're doing it. You know, we talked a lot about, on yesterday's show at least, about the direction the Blazers should go. Should it be like, blow it up? And that means trade Damian Lillard because he would want out of there. Or is it like, try and keep Lillard happy and shake it up by moving some of these other potential guys on their roster, a McCollum, a Nurkic, a Covington. So that's what we're going to do here. I tweeted it out yesterday. I said, hey, NBA sickos, let's see your best non-Damian Lillard trades for the Trailblazers. And I said, you know, those three guys make the most sense. What you got? People love trades. Holy crap, Lili. A lot of responses. A lot of, like, decent ones. A lot of convoluted ones, I will say, where you get into, like, the three-team deals, the four-team deals. It's a little it's a little much to try and talk about on a podcast at times, but I did find some that I thought are like, okay, let's throw that at the guys. Let's throw it at the stream team and everybody listening and see what they think. So we'll go through them sort of player by player here. We're starting with CJ McCollum, and I'm just going to put aside the Sixers move, which I think is the most obvious. I think a lot of us agree is probably the most obvious in terms of trying to get Ben Simmons. Maybe it includes McCollum and then other pieces and picks to make it happen, but we've talked enough about that. So some other ideas. To set up McCollum, I want everybody to know, 30-year-old shooting guard. He's not as young as you sort of think. I always think of McCollum as like a 25, 26-year-old, but he's not. He's in his 30s. He probably would have made his first All-Star game last year if he didn't get hurt. He was definitely in the running, but he's never made that. This year, shade under 21 points per game, 42% shooting from the floor. Those are really bad numbers for CJ McCollum since he's become a starter. I think a lot of it has to do with all of this trade talk and his name being included in a lot of these deals. I know he's talked to Jason Quick about it on The Athletic. He's also having a baby. I think some off-court distractions are in play here. But he looks a little disinterested, and he doesn't look like the CJ McCollum from years prior. He makes nearly $31 million for this year, and that only goes up for the final 2 years. 33 next year, 36 after that. Tass, it does not become easy to trade a CJ McCollum because he makes a lot of money. So, of course, salary has to be coming back. But I want to get your take on this one, Tass. There was two similar trades thrown at me with McCollum going to the Cavaliers. Yes, the Cleveland Cavaliers. So the first one was from Taylor. It was McCollum and let's say Nasir Little to the Cavs for Kevin Love and Colin Sexton. Colin Sexton is the key piece in both of these. And then the other one I saw or heard from Sam Vecenie and Danny LaRue was McCollum and nobody else, really just McCollum, to the Cavs for Ricky Rubio, Colin Sexton, and Chetty Osman. I just want to ask you, McCollum to the Cavaliers with something, a big contract, of course, going back to make it happen, make any sense at all to you, Tass, from either side, or no thanks, I've got gum?
I am absolutely a Cleveland Cavaliers head. This is what I do in my spare time. I follow the Cleveland Cavaliers basketball club. I do not think they would make such a move. I just understand that he would be an upgrade. He is better than what he is this year. He was kind of on his way to being an all-star before getting hurt last year, shooting 11 threes a game, looking phenomenal, 26 points per game. That was his best year. I just don't think he's on the timeline of the Cleveland Cavaliers. As you said, 30s.
True.
It's not his place there in Cleveland. They have such a good thing going on right now. Kobe Altman has made some incredible moves to sneak in and grab Jared Allen in the four-way James Harden deal, and then to draft Evan Mobley. And Ricky Rubio, yeah, he's not long for Cleveland, most likely. He's in his 30s too, but an upgrade there, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I would rather stay young. And you described or said there, you snuck in there that Jason Quick on The Athletic has talked to CJ McCollum recently. The start of that article this morning, it's not a usual start to the article to an article. I was reading Jason Quick's article about CJ McCollum, so this I want to read it. I want to read Jason Quick's start here. This is how it starts. I was driving home Monday after the Trail Blazers' latest loss, deep in thought about a 10-minute conversation I just had with CJ McCollum in the back hallway of the Moda Center when my phone pinged. It was McCollum. As I looked down at this text message, I was taken aback. Enough so that I pulled over and read it again. This is the quote from McCollum. Oregon is my home. Always will be. I got married here. My son will be born here. We bought 318 acres here. That's a brag. And started planting our vineyard here. This city and organization have been very good to me and my family. We're forever grateful. And Jason Quick writes, as my car idled on the side of the road, my mind raced. Did I miss something? Did McCollum get traded? I did a quick search. Nothing. Damn, I texted back. You made it sound like a goodbye. It's not a goodbye, he replied. I'm still here, my friend. McCollum wants to be there forever. He ain't going anywhere. It's like him saying, I like it here. I don't want to go anywhere. But they have to make a move, obviously, as we've talked about forever and ever, and he could be in on that. But I don't see the Cavs thing. I'm out on the Cavs thing.
Okay, Trey, what do you think of a McCollum to a Cavaliers type of deal, which, again, has to include basically a Love or a Rubio-type contract, and then Colin Sexton, I guess, being the key piece going back to the Blazers?
I don't mind it from the Cavs' perspective. CJ McCollum is an Ohio guy. Maybe a homecoming does him well. There would be a spot for him, I think, as the two guard. It would be not dissimilar to playing alongside Damian Lillard, playing alongside Darius Garland in Cleveland, and they would be turning Rubio, an expiring contract, and the potential and the restricted free agency of Colin Sexton, a player that doesn't seem to be in their plans, turning him into a guy in McCollum who's got a couple more years on his contract. I think that's pretty good for the Cavs, to be quite honest, and I think it definitely makes them better, especially considering they're not getting anything from Sexton for the rest of this year.
Lee, final thoughts on this one?
I actually don't mind it as well. And now, it may only get the Cavs a few more wins and sort of get them into the playoffs, but he's a steady veteran, and apart from last season, he's pretty reliable and durable, CJ McCollum. And so he can give them that veteran presence of, like, another guy who can score. Sexton, I think they probably are moving on from him. And yeah, Rubio's not really a part of their future either. So if you can get CJ, and again, he's only 30, it can be looked at as like, well, that's old. Or you can say, well, he's still got a good 2 or 3 years left to sort of help this team continue its ascension. So I don't mind it. I think there's something there. The Cavs, I think clearly Garland, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley is their sort of core. But if you can get a good veteran who you know can get you a bucket on the side there, that's not a bad little return for a team that's kind of moving on from those other pieces anyway.
Okay, the other one I had from Brad was McCollum to the Timberwolves for Malik Beasley and Torian Prince. I don't think that's going to wow anyone here on the call. But yeah, what do you think of that move, let's say for the Blazers? Is that enough? I mean, it works obviously in the trade machine, Trey. Beasley and Prince getting some wing help there for McCollum and moving off of him. I think that would, if something like that were to go down, there would be other trades to be had, of course.
Yeah, you'd have to do some other moves as well, because that's not enough when Ben Simmons is potentially on the table. I would rather have the Rubio Sexton love package as well. So I don't know, two bench guys for your second leading scorer, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes difficult with this just path that the Blazers might try and take here, Lee. This idea of, like, you'd be trading these guys, McCollum, Nurkic, Covington, for, in theory, good players now, because you'd want to be appeasing Damian Lillard and saying, hey, we're still good, we can be good, we're going to be a playoff team, we're going to go even further than we've gone. That's not obviously easy to do. It sort of becomes easier to trade guys for, like, future pieces, for flyers on young guys, for picks and stuff like that. But then if you do that, Lillard's going to be like, what, WTF, man? Why are we doing that? And then suddenly you could see yourself in the summer, him going, well, I want out of here if that's the plan. So it becomes, I think that's the dance here that's difficult for Joe Cronin or whoever's making the decisions there.
It doesn't make sense to trade those guys unless you're going to get some other draft capital in return and then say, okay, we've got to make this trade work financially, but we're doing it mainly so that we can start the rebuild process. And if you're doing that, then clearly you need to also move on from Lillard. I mean, there's no point in putting him in a rebuild situation right now. But yeah, on the surface, two bench kind of journeyman for a solid starter doesn't improve Portland at all. So I don't see why they would do that. But if the Wolves say, yeah, we really want that guy as a scorer, we'll give you these two guys and then we'll also give you a couple of draft picks, then at least the Blazers are like, well, that's something that we're building towards something, even if it's not this season.
All right, let's move to Nurkic. He's averaging 13-10 this year in about 25 minutes per game, shooting 59% from the floor. He's in the final year of his deal, $12 million he makes. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. He's represented by Clutch Sports. Don't forget that. All right, very important. Now, Rich Paul wants to get these guys paid. So probably any deal, if Nurkic is going out, the Blazers are going to need some front court reinforcements coming back. And they also are going to probably try and make their payroll cheaper. So there were a couple suggestions. The first one was from Manu, not Ginobili, another Manu. Nurkic, Covington got thrown in this one, and then probably a young player, let's say Nasir Little, though I know the Blazers are high on him, to the Pacers for Sabonis and Jeremy Lamb. So Nurk, Covington, and again, probably a young player, let's say Nasir Little for now, to the Pacers task for Sabonis and Jeremy Lamb. Sabonis, get another Sabonis in Portland. Is this a move they should be looking to explore?
I don't think so, because, yeah, the Blazers would get better. The Blazers would do it. I'm sorry, the Blazers, yes, of course. They're trading for a star. They're trading up. But the Pacers would just be another lateral move. That's just five good guys becomes, I don't know, five and a half good guys. Like, and you're kind of trading down. You're trading at Sabonis's peak for Nurkic's non-peak. They're not getting better. So I don't think so. I think along with McCollum, along with even Nurkic, I know he's not playing his best. I think we're kind of undervaluing the Blazers. I know I am. I know, like, you know, McCollum would go make the Cavs a lot better at the shooting guard position, especially on a really good defensive team when he's struggled on the defensive end. And I think we kind of undervalue Nurkic and stuff, but nah, I think that doesn't make the Pacers better.
That's a great trade for the Blazers. I'm with you on that. Yeah. And I don't think Indiana, you guys seem to be agreeing. Lili, anything to add?
Oh, Sabonis, yeah, I would take him over Nurkic for sure. But I just don't see why the Pacers would do that to give up Sabonis to get Nurkic in return. They would want some sort of draft assets, I think, and signaling that they are then moving in that direction. And probably then that is a bit of a domino effect on trading Turner and when becomes available, Brogdon as well.
Okay. This one, Nurkic to the Hornets. That's been a popular one. They could use a big guy to try and guard Joel Embiid last night to put up a better effort, at least put a hand up. So why don't we just do a Nurk for Plum Dog again? That's happened before. Sam Vecenie, Nurkic to the Hornets for Plumlee, and then one of their young front court guys. Okay, so like a Jalen McDaniels, like a Nick Richards, like a Kai Jones. So that would be the deal. To get Nurkic to Charlotte, and then the Blazers in return getting like a prospect type guy, and then a Plum Dog who has played there before, and he's a Plum Dog. You might have an opinion on him, but what do you think, Trey? No way something like this happens.
Well, I love the idea of finally uniting a Plumlee and a Zeller there for the Trailblazers. That would be just incredible. True. But to me, Nurkic going to the Hornets makes sense, but them trading several big guys does not make sense. Like you said, they need help inside. Nurkic would help. I'm not the biggest Nurkic fan, but he's certainly an improvement over Nick Richards, who they've been playing. But if you're trading two of your three centers to bring back one center, you're still one center down, and that's clearly been the biggest weakness for the Hornets. So I would rather trade one of their random backcourt guys, like maybe Bouknight. He just hasn't had a chance to really get on the court, and it doesn't seem like he's necessarily going to with the squad they've got put together right now. But I do like the idea of Nurkic on the Hornets.
Tess, can you come up with something? You know, would the Hornets explore this, like Trey is saying? One of their young guys, and then whatever else to make the contracts work to get Nurkic in there. And it could be a rental. This is the weird thing with Nurkic. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know if you'd be agreeing to some sort of deal in the future. Again, you're going to be negotiating with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. So maybe that concerns teams. And like, they're like, I don't want to be the one paying Nurkic, you know, $15 million a year. No, thank you. But what do you think?
Nurkic is a Clutch Sports guy. I didn't know that. It didn't seem like a fit to me. Nurkic and Clutch. That's a surprise. But the Hornets are long for a big guy. And, yeah, they've been drafting athletic wing after athletic wing after athletic wing. It seems like there's a match to happen there. And the Hornets, I mean, you go back a couple of years, they thought they had Marc Gasol at the deadline before the Raptors got him. They are looking for an experienced big. And I'm not just thinking of white centers that would fit, but Nurkic would fit. Yeah, they wanted Gasol. Now, Nurkic would be a nice player for them. And again, I know Nurkic has not, you know, lived up to the hype there in Portland at all. But yeah, a little rental, give it a shot. I mean, the Hornets they're overflowing with all these really athletic wings. So I could see something working there. Sure.
Yeah, Lee, I just think if the Blazers move off Nurkic, Blazers fans, maybe everybody, would need to lower their expectations of what would be coming back in return. Because you sort of think of Nurkic as a decent player. When he is playing at his best, the Blazers look like a really, really good team over the last couple of years. And then he has these weird funks where he's just like can't stay on the court because of foul trouble, or, you know, he's always like sort of injury prone a little bit too. And then he's like a big dip. But he's nobody's going to be trading for a guy that is a pending unrestricted free agent here, like a ton, I don't think. So I think they would be hoping. It's almost like, you know, the Raptors at the trading Kyle Lowry because he's going to be walking. So they're like, well, let's get Precious for him. You know, let's get a young sort of guy that we'll take a flyer on and maybe is turned into a building block. And I think that's what the Blazers would be hoping for in a return. And maybe it is one of these young Hornets players.
Well, I think the Hornets should give up one of those young players for the right piece coming back. And that, again, comes down to someone who, you know, is going to be there for way longer than Nurkic. Nurkic is only 27, by the way. It feels like he's older than that. I mean, so if you look at his age, you think that guy could have a long, still prosperous career, but he has had some big injuries too throughout his career. So you wonder about his durability in that sense. But the Hornets can't afford to try to hoard these young guys right now. They desperately need some interior help. So they should be prepared to at least give up one of them. Exactly who that is, I think Book Knight's probably the one who's going to get the most interest from other teams. But yeah, I mean, if you can get rid of Plumlee, you may as well. Anyone will take him. But they need to... Well, they've got, you know, they've got tradable assets there, Charlotte, so they have to give up something. Just not sure Nurkic, given his injury history and his contract status, they would be prepared to do it for that short-term window here.
All right, our final guy here from these Blazers we're trying to move. Sir Robert Covington, 31 years old. He makes $13 million, also a pending unrestricted free agent. He's a talented help defender, I think we would agree. Career 40% three-point shooter, so he can knock down the three ball. He was traded a year ago to Portland for Trevor Ariza, a 2020 first-round pick, and a 2021 protected first-round pick. Yeah, I can't imagine that would be the return that the Blazers would be getting in some sort of potential deal. But here's a popular one, Trey. You want him on the Bulls? Because Dave W. says Covington to the Bulls for Coby White, and then maybe like a Tony Brown Jr. and a draft pick, like some sort of compensation.
I don't mind it. Robert Covington, an Illinois boy, doing a lot less, I imagine, for the Bulls than he would be for the Blazers. And Covington, like you said, Skeets, is a great help defender, not a great on-ball defender, which is good because the Bulls have some solid on-ball defenders now with Lonzo and Caruso. I've been eyeing Covington. I've been eyeing Nurkic. I've even been eyeing Cody Zeller off the bench for the Bulls because they could use another backup big and another just a little bit more size there. And as we've seen through the beginning of the season, the Bulls are at least a good team. The league is maybe a little unsettled right now, so I don't mind throwing a young player like Coby White into a trade to really try and go for a bit of an extended playoff run here.
Tass, what do you think? Does that make some sense? Is that enough for the Blazers? Would they be happy with that, especially him coming up to a free agency? If you moved Covington for Coby White and Tony Brown Jr., and again, like some sort of pick compensation?
Yeah, I don't think they could even get that much for Robert Covington. And the way he's playing right now, he's been benched in Portland, which is kind of bonkers for the 30th best defensive team in the league. They're dead last. They put Robert Covington on the bench. I don't think they get a solid young guy in Coby White and another guy. I don't see that happening. But yeah, the Bulls would love him for sure. The Bulls would be very excited for him. But yeah, it's what the Blazers are looking to do. Is it time to implode and just go real young and try and get as much value and much return as possible for this roster that has peaked at one Western Conference final? Is it time? Is it the best move to get as much value as possible for even Damian Lillard? I think that's it's a question John Hollinger asked on The Athletic. It's a reasonable question. What do you do? What do you do with this this roster? So, yeah, take a chance on Coby White, who the Bulls were really high on, and now he's become kind of an afterthought in that rotation.
Again, that's like just goes back to the whole thing. Like, if you're going to trade these three guys that we're talking about here, the Covington, Nurk, and McCollum, for just trade assets, like draft picks and young prospects, then you're literally just like for sure going to be trading Damian Lillard.
Exactly.
Like, you are. Like, otherwise, you have to like try and get some talent back, and it's not easy, as I think we're proving here with some of these potential trade deals. Lee, you have any thoughts on the Bulls acquiring Covington though, and maybe a Coby White being the key piece coming back?
Yeah, I think the Bulls would do that. A veteran, good defender. He's got that 7'2 wingspan, Robert Covington. Remember, he was kind of the small ball guy in Houston. I think he was kind of playing center for a while because when they went totally small there with Daryl Morey, him and PJ. I think he is a good player who can hit that three at his best, and he's a reliable defender. And I think Coby White, you would give up that piece to get that veteran on your team, because the Bulls are certainly closer to win now mode than perhaps they thought they were going to be coming into the season, so it's worth it. But Man, the fact that Neil O'Shea gave up 2 first-round picks for Robert Covington, he should have been fired for that alone, really. I mean, that's a sort of move that the general manager's made that's just is hampering the franchise, I think. So, I like him on the Bulls. I think that's good. But if you're the Blazers, yeah, for a guy who's not part of their rotation now anyway, sure, why not take another young guy?
I had some funny ones that people suggested as well that I wanted to share with you guys. I love this one. This was from Disney Alex Max on Twitter. Why don't the Pacers and the Blazers just basically swap all their guys? And it works in the trade machine, okay? Sabonis, Miles Turner, and Caris LeVert going to Portland for McCollum, Covington, and Nurkic. There you go, Tass. Just our 3 for your 3. There we go. No problem.
The numbers work. I'm peering into this YouTube screenshot. The numbers, that's Sabonis, Miles Turner, and Caris LeVert, very close in salaries.
Yeah.
You didn't think that 19.8, 18, and 17.5. Caris LeVert, I take our guys who are underperforming a little bit, Caris LeVert specifically, for your guys who are underperforming with the Blazers. that's the thing, as I mentioned, like McCollum, Covington, and Nurkic, it's the beauty is in the eye of the beholder because McCollum, yeah, underperforming, but he's a virtual all-star player. Nurkic, it potted over 30 last night. You know, you see one of those games against you, you think this guy can be a really good big, but will he do that all the time? And who was that other player? Oh, Covington, same thing. Yeah, he could play the 5 just like Lee said. Oh, modern day wing, he could do it. The Blazers, they're all underperforming. But trade them. They'll probably be better in a different environment. Why not?
And then I love this one, Lee. This is a 4-team deal, but it's just one player moving from each team. This one from Biased Cavs Fan. I'll show it to you here as well. Fun breakdown. McCollum to the Dallas Mavericks. Porzingis to the Kings. De'Aaron Fox to the Sixers. And Ben Simmons to the Blazers. What do you think, Lee? I wrote back to him. I said, if you could get Kyrie Irving involved somehow, this would be the, this would be chef's kiss, hanging in the loop. Yeah. But what do you think of this 14?
So I like it for the Sixers.
Yes.
I like it for the Mavericks.
Okay. You must Kings. Like it for the Blazers.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it. Let's pull the trigger on this.
Call it in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to sort of put it all together quickly in my head here. But I'm saying we would. I mean, imagine the NBA on Twitter that day. That would be awesome. Everyone just with their fire take. So I would love to see the chaos of this trade happen. And if it can work, the GM should just go, who gives a shit? Why not? Let's just try it and see what happens.
Yeah, that's how you keep a job in the NBA. Who gives a shit? Let's just do it.
I can't believe Porzingis is like the biggest jump in wins here. +8 wins if he goes to the Kings. Porzingis.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is very weird. So there it is. Yeah, Simmons to the Blazers, McCollum to the Mavericks, Porzingis to the Kings, and De'Aaron Fox to the 76ers.
Biased Cavs fans, not far off. His Twitter handle is Biased Cavs Fan, but he threw together a pretty even trade. It's not bad. I mean, the team that Lee wasn't sold on was the Kings there because they're getting Porzingis in exchange for De'Aaron Fox, but De'Aaron Fox underperforming Porzingis right now. He's hot. Why not?
Well, he's injured, isn't he?
He's
right
injured.
Now?
He's injured again.
Yeah,
but,
he had a great run. A great run before that, one of maybe the best run of his career, but he's injured again. And, hey, listen, we've got a fan out there who's been emailing us, taking his victory lap. Where's all the talk about Porzingis now? Just want to say, where's the emails now that he's injured again? That's all. I mean, Porzingis can be a great player, and we've seen flashes of it, but the two knocks on him are consistency and injury. So, if you're going to come at us, or me, when he's playing well, fine. But you can't also then just not email when he's injured again. That's all I'm saying. That's
talking email, like a true man. Knicks fan who has gone through it with Kristaps Porzingis.
All right, so let's hear your trades for any of these Blazers. You can leave them in the stream team. You can leave them below this video. You can tweet them in at NoDunksInc. It's not easy, I think, is the point here with a lot of these guys to, again, get talent back that would, in theory, get the Blazers back into the mix in the Western Conference to keep Lillard happy and to go from there. It's just not. It's becomes easier just to be like, okay, everything must go, including Damian Lillard, and really, really lean into a long-term rebuild. And that might be what they have to do. I know, Trey, you sort of think that is the only really way at this point, because you can't convince yourself otherwise that a shake-up trade will really do all that much.
Yeah, that's the question. And I guess the question for the Blazers is, do you think that trading for Ben Simmons is a shakeup trade, or is that a serious improvement trade? Because, you know, Ben Simmons has been a good player during the regular season throughout his career. He makes his teams better. He plays defense. He gets easy shots for his teammates. And in the playoffs, you got to deal with him not taking shots. That's what's going to happen. So I don't know. I would rather try that sort of middle path where, like, Simmons, bringing in Simmons from McCollum, you at least try it one more time with Damian Lillard before, you know, he ends up wanting to go somewhere else. Like, it happened for Kevin Garnett, right? They tried everything around Kevin Garnett in Minnesota. Yeah. Eventually, the writing was on the wall and they had to start over.
Yep. I think, again, if I'm still a betting man, I think that's exactly what they end up doing. A McCollum move to, like, try and salvage their season, to try and keep Lillard happy. And then go from there. I'm not convinced that whatever that move is, Ben Simmons, somebody from the Pelicans, somebody from the Wizards, you know, whatever, maybe a potential Cavs trade. I just don't think it's going to, like, catapult them up here. I really don't. They're in such a funk, but maybe they do, and maybe it will work. The shakeup trade happens, or works, I should say, every once in a while, Tass. But I think it's few and far between, for being honest.
Yeah. What is the Blazers front office thinking? Yeah, and will the man there, Cronin, Joe Cronin, who's worked up his way through the Blazers hierarchy? I mean, he's been there forever. He's a salary cap expert. Now he's got the reins. Does he have the reins to blow it up, or does he have the reins to make one single trade? Which, yeah, that would make sense logically. Keep Dame happy, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you just have to go for it. And just one quick note before we move on, because you said you're a betting man, Skeet. Speaking of betting, a little bit later, we'll get to our pick and payoff. I didn't pick the Nets-Mavericks game because Kristaps Porzingis was listed as questionable, and I thought everyone's taking the Nets. But he's been upgraded to probable. So we're getting an email, Lee. Kristaps Porzingis can be back on the floor tonight, it sure looks like. So maybe he's not injured at all. It's a knee injury, so of course everyone worried, seeing him in a very sharp suit with no tie on the sideline. But he might be back playing basketball tonight.
We will see. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we got Lee's tweet of the night and pick'em results and our new pick for tonight.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter. Yes, I am going off the board for this one and going back to the homeland of my birth, in fact, because this comes in.
What are you talking about right now?
I'm going
off the board and going to the homeland.
Yes, I'm going off the board. No one asked.
Yeah, well,
homeland.
Well, Skeeter, usually you set me up. You usually say, Lily, what you got? I was waiting for it. Didn't have it. Anyway, I'm going to the KFC Big Bash League for this outstanding feat of athleticism by Jake Fraser McGuirk.
Cannot wait. Oh, I think he might have got enough.
McGurk with a one-hander, a screamer on the boundary of Marvel.
Yes, that is from the Big Bash League in Australia, the 2020 competition. Now, check it out. I've got some replays here of this catch. Just look at the athleticism on this, because remember, no gloves by the fieldsman in cricket. Yeah. Look at this. Watch what he does here to catch this one. It gets up. Boom.
Nice.
That is incredible. Here it is again. Look at that. That's
a lot of fans in attendance for this.
Yeah, nah, I mean, nah. I'm not sure if that's coronavirus related or
all
not.
Eight but, people saw that catch.
Yeah, yeah. Just hey, you know what? Tweet of the week, tweet of the night. You can go wherever you want. I thought, great, I'll show you some cricket highlights. Great stuff.
All right. What's his name? James McSquirt? What did you call him? Jamie McQuirt?
What's going on there?
What's his name? I'm asking.
His name is Jake Fraser McGurk. You seem a little bit, I don't know, a bit saucy today, Skeety. You're always something in the air.
Fantastic. NBA podcast audio, watching a cricket highlight. I love it.
What a catch.
What a catch.
Incredible stuff. Yeah. Incredible stuff.
It reminds me, I played 1 year of mushball. It's softball with no gloves. That's what that catch reminds me of.
Nice.
A lot of broken fingers. A lot of broken fingers in mushball. A lot of broken fingers in cricket, Lee. People break.
Yes,
fingers?
Yes. In fact, you can't really see it, but I got a couple of broken fingers from cricket because the ball's hard, especially when it gets whacked like that. I mean, you practice those sorts of things, so you learn how to sort of catch on that. But still, you know, you just catch it at the wrong angle or whatever, and it can it can do some damage. The catcher is called a wicket keeper in cricket. Now, his fingers at the end of his career are like Alvin Gentry, Sean Marion. I think catchers in, I think like in baseball, aren't they? You know, like Jorge Posada, for example. I think all his, or one side of his hand was.
I think they have gloves.
For example.
Yeah, but he only actually catches with one hand, doesn't he, really?
Yeah. But I mean, it probably hurts.
In cricket, you got the two hands there. So, yeah, their fingers are all a bit wonky at the end of their careers.
You learn to cradle it as a kid, right? Yeah, cricket cradler, right?
You caress that thing, you collect it. Yeah, you don't want, because the ball's going so fast, you don't just want to like go forward. You want to like catch it like that, take the speed off it as you catch it.
I got a question for you, Lee. We got No Buffs, that's a Survivor podcast. Yeah. We got No Breaks, that's an F1 podcast. Where's the cricket podcast?
You want a cricket podcast?
No.
I don't, but people might. Well, what do you mean?
Hey, I had Mark Waugh on this year. Hall of Famer, Mark Waugh.
You did. I listened. It was good.
Yeah. You want to talk catches, you can check out Mark Waugh's highlight reel, his mixtape of catches.
Hey, greatest save it for catcher. Next tweet of the week when you're going off the board to the homeland of your
greatest birth. Greatest slips catcher of all time, Mark Waugh. So, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, we've got a comment saying cricket podcast. Yes, if you're listening, and we're just saying
this. Lee saying Jorge, what's not his name, Parada, but is ASMR. Give it one more time.
Jorge Posada.
Ah.
Yeah.
Now I can go to sleep.
Yeah, but funnily enough, Jorge Posada used to bat without gloves, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? Because I don't know. Most batters wear gloves, don't they, these
days? That's true, yeah.
I'd say so, yeah.
Jorge, yeah, I remember. He was great. And no gloves, but he was the catcher. Interesting.
You definitely talked to him in a piece down at the Skydome once, I assume.
I did. Yes. Part of that big piece I did with on Joe Girardi. I spoke with Jeter.
Also a catcher. How are his fingers?
Yeah, didn't actually notice his fingers, but he's the Phillies bench boss these days, isn't he, Joe Girardi?
Phillies bench boss. Is there a single notable American cricket player?
Not that I'm aware of. Although, Sammy Sosa grew up playing cricket, apparently. Cricket was his first game. Because he grew up in...
DR.
Was he Dominican? Yeah. So, apparently, he was a good cricketer as a kid. But Danny Ainge... No, he never played, that's right. No, he played baseball, didn't he? Yeah. No. But the 2020 stuff is what I'm going to take you guys to one day.
Oh yeah,
that's where
going.
You have a fun time. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I like this from Rich. He says, "What would the name of the cricket podcast be?" No interest.
Oh, you say that, Rich. You say that. But there's no doubt in my mind, guys like Rich would be like, I've got to hate listen to this at least once or twice. You know, they have to. They have to. Just in case they get intrigued by it and they're like, okay, there is something to this after all.
Okay. Great tweet of the night. Love it. Jamie McDirt. Jamie Fraser McDirt. Pick'em results from last night. OKC was in Detroit. Pistons were favored by 4.5. This brought to you by BetMGM. Man, Pistons were looking good. Looking like they were taking care of business. No problem. We got this. And then OKC in the second half stormed back. Got the victory. Straight up money line hit. And Trey Kirby, he calls it. This guy's perfect in the month of December. 4-0 here in our pick'em battle. Task down to 2-2, and me and Lee bringing up the rear. 1-3, Lili. No surprise for me, but shocking for you. Anyway, tonight's game, Task, where are we going? There's only three games on tonight.
Yeah, the TNT doubleheader is Nets-Mavericks, Celtics-Lakers. Usually. I'm definitely looking at the big games, but don't say we don't pick the league pass games. I'm going to a small market team like the New York Knicks. I'm playing the San Antonio Spurs. I thought that game would be a little bit more difficult to call. I thought we'd all generally take the Lakers or the Nets, considering Porzingis was out. So I went Knicks-Spurs, and I'm the only one who thinks that the Knicks can bounce back against the Spurs team. That was on a bit of a winning streak until they lost last night. They were on a four-gamer. But they lost last night. And the Knicks, yes, some questions as to what's going on with that rotation. RJ Barrett not looking great. But, you know, they seem healthier, so I think they can bounce back. But why do you guys think the Spurs will take care of business? A team, let's be honest, we rarely talk about on this show. Who's got a hot Spurs take right now?
Well, I'll tell you my reasoning for taking the Spurs. I have an app on my phone. It's called Flip a Coin. I fired it up this morning. I hit this little button on it, and the coin flipped, and I decided, well, the home team will, if heads comes up, that's the home team. If tails comes up, that's the road team, and heads came up, so the Spurs are going to cover.
I did think that you were using some method of either because...
Why do you say that?
Well, because I put in my pick, and you immediately put in your pick. And so a lot of people have been saying to you, hey, you've been losing a lot of pick-ems. Just go with the opposite of your gut,
see,
man.
It drives me insane. No, I've done that. I've done that 100 times. I'm like, I can't pick one to save my life, so I'll go the opposite. And then I just get it wrong. That doesn't work. So now I'm leaving it completely up to chance.
That's a great app to have.
It really is.
Because I linger. I like to linger doing a lot of things. And sometimes it's good just to have something just to shut my brain off and say, I'm going to make a decision using the old coin app.
Yeah, Flip a Coin.
It's my coin app. Is it called Flip a Coin?
Oh my God, there's ads all over it. It didn't pop up this morning. Anyway, I guess I got to buy the premium version of Flip a Coin. I got a Grubhub ad. I can't even flip the coin. There we go.
Why don't you just flip a coin the old-fashioned way?
Nobody has coins anymore. You got coins?
I got coins
nearby.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I got a man's coin right here.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, it's Peter Manzanelli. He's a big crypto influencer. You should check out some of his stuff. The problem, though, is it's the same thing on both sides.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. So I went with SAS because I knew we were going to be talking about Sammy Sosa today. I was just feeling the vibes.
All right. That's non-fungible, I guess, if it's the same on both sides. Oh, thank you.
What do you got, Lee?
I got a US $1 coin, rare.
Oh, very rare.
I got a couple of quarters here, and I've got even 50 euro cents. Wow. So there you go. And I got a Canadian 5 cents. There you go, the beaver. The Canadian beaver. We all love some Canadian beaver. There you go, it's 5 cents worth.
Holy crap.
The homeland of your birth.
The homeland of my birth. The Canadian beaver is called Justin.
Oh, JD, could you hurry up and get that classic factory in order, man? So we can just all get back together. Guys, call it there. Email your NBA questions in to nodunks@theathletic.com. Seriously here, we're going to probably hit the beach tomorrow. There's only three games on tonight, so we'll do some beach stepping. If you got a good question about the NBA or non-NBA, send it in, nodunks@theathletic.com. You can tweet it in at NoDunksInc. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Grab yourself an Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/NoDunks. And a reminder, new No Breaks coming up very soon. It's our F1 podcast live later today here at 2 p.m. Eastern on this very podcast feed. So No Breaks coming at you. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, just like the end of this show, sometimes it kind of, you know, kind of hangs on a little bit, kind of lingers a little bit. Yeah, that's me making decisions a lot of the time. That's when my wife will say, do you have to? Do you have to? Do you have to? Do you have to let it linger?
You always put in one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
yes. Oh, I do. Yeah.
You do that. Oh, yeah, it's weird.
It loves to linger.
It lingers on the linger lyrics.
It's one of those mental mashups, you know? I just create new words for it.
Here, hold on. Don't go anywhere, JD. I'll flip the coin, and if it comes up heads, we gotta just ramble for another minute or two, okay? And if it comes up tails, well, then I'll say embrace today. Here we go. Tap to flip. Ooh, you hear that?
Yeah.
Didn't know I had that little tails. Embrace the day, people. You could stay.